Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. America may lead the world in two categories. We are materialistic consumers and we are a disposable society. While buying things is good and consumption may well be the way out of our current economic doldrums, the way we dispose of things is less beneficial. In fact, our guest today will tell us that overconsumption of goods and services is harmful to the environment. I'm Don Marsh. We'll be talking about it today with two women who are dedicated to educating us about where we are going wrong and who have very specific ideas about how to change that. Madeline Choci is Senior Program Manager, Waste Prevention Specialist for the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, but she's here in a private capacity as an environmental activist for an event tonight. We'll have more on that event a little bit later. Jean Ponzi is Green Resources Manager for Earthways Center of the Missouri Botanical Garden. Earthways promotes sustainability through education and other programs in the St. Louis area. Thank you so much, both of you, for being with us. Nice to have you here.
It's great to be here.
Thanks, Madeline, for having me.
Madeline, it's nice to meet you. And I'm sure you're going to have a good event tonight. As I say, we'll talk a little bit more about that later. But let me begin with you. Why is consumption such a problem?
Consumption is a problem because that's really the root driver of our environmental problems. We like to think that it's all about the disposal at the final end of what you do with it. But really what we find is that the chair you're sitting on right now was made of things dug out of the ground, you know, processed, manufactured, moved around, lots of energy intensiveness in that chair. The same goes for everything that has been manufactured around us. And really, it's those upstream, what we call those upstream impacts, that are so much more powerful. And that's where the pollution's coming from.
Isn't that where we should seek the solution then?
That is absolutely where we should seek the solution. So I've been working on, I'm a board member of a small nonprofit that's just getting started called Reuse Minnesota. And that's one of the ways that I think we can really start to seek the solution is by reusing more of what we've got to get all of the lifespan out of the materials that we use. And when I say materials, again, I mean products. I mean everything around us.
And so what should we be doing with them when we're finally through with them?
When you're finally through with them, you definitely want to do the best you can in terms of either donating something so that it can get reused again. If it's just broken a little bit, can you get it fixed? I'd like to bring back that old idea of fixing things, and I have some great examples about that. And of course, if it has components that can be recycled, they need to get to the recycling stream.
Jean, this is, of course, music to your ears to have a colleague saying the kinds of things that you've been saying for a long time.
Well, you're saying it from Minnesota, and it's really glad. I've admired what has been happening in waste management and waste minimization and the attitude about that in Minnesota for a long time, being an advocate of this kind of stuff in St. Louis. And, you know, you go to a national conference, and I remember hearing a presentation about curbside composting in Hennepin County, Minnesota, probably 10 years ago. We do have that kind of service now here in the St. Louis area, but educating people about what that is and why they should use it and how it becomes part of our habits, part of our infrastructure is still something that we're working on. I totally agree about, you know, the three R's are reduce, do you need it in the first place, reuse, get it fixed, pass it on, can you get, you know, is it something that you can pick up that you can reuse, and then recycle, and they happen in that order for a very good reason. And just changing our attitudes about who we are in the food chain, human beings and every other kind of animal life are consumers because we can't make food. Plants make food from sunlight and we need them. And however, we are sold such a bill of goods about being consumers and that we need to buy things and we need more and it should be disposable is convenient, which was a concept that was developed after World War II. Planned obsolescence. You know, yesterday was the anniversary of the 9/11 disaster. And I remember what we were told as a culture when that happened, go shopping. So we get that message really ramrodded from the time we are tiny, tiny little humans and all through our lives. And one of the ways that we need to be responsible is to decode that message and unburden ourselves from that. It's expensive and it's goofy and it's demanding in a very unproductive way.
We've been talking about these environmental concerns, a wide range of them, for a long time. From the local perspective, Jean, I'll put this to you first and then to Madeline. How quick has the public been on the uptake in receiving this message and doing something about it?
Well, in my experience, Don, working with green subject matter for 25 years, recycling is always the first thing people think about when they think about doing something green, even though it's the third thing in that 3 R's hierarchy. So it's very prevalent in people's minds, but there's also a lot of confusion because every municipality lets their own recycling as well as trash hauling contract. So somebody in Webster Groves can't necessarily recycle the same thing as somebody in Edwardsville. There isn't a lot of consistency across the country. It's a very localized kind of thing. How do you find out? How do you get that information that you should even want to ask about that information in the same way that you'd want to know, you know, any other thing that's specific to where you live or where your kids go to school? It's a continually changing body of information, but then so are a lot of other continually changing bodies. I think today in St. Louis, we have a pretty phenomenally diverse and strong and affordable infrastructure of waste minimization options, services that run the gamut from resale and deconstruction of houses and buildings all the way up through all kinds of recycling and composting. And more and more people are interested and doing it. And you see it and hear about it in places like Busch Stadium and at Lambert International Airport and in your schools and in public events all over town. And that popularization, thanks to many organizations around town like the Cardinals and StLouisGreen.com and Earthway Center and St. Louis Earth Day, our solid waste management district that makes grants to support those programs, is putting that in the public eye and ear in a way that is really mainstream now. And yet there are still more people we have to reach.
Mm-hmm. Madeline, the same perspective from your...
Very much so. Yeah. It's very similar. One of the things that's happening that in Minneapolis that we're seeing a lot of in the Twin Cities really is the growth of this sharing economy, too, this notion of collaborative consumption, which I really, really like and I'm excited to see. And so an example is in Hennepin County, which is the largest county in the state and where Minneapolis sits, the county government has actually started sponsoring what they're calling fix-it clinics. And those are happening one Saturday every month. And you couldn't ask for a better, more community-driven sort of event. They invite volunteers who know about fixing things, just how to tinker, to come to a community, might be a community center or something like that. And then residents who have something broken, a household good, we all have something like that, a toaster oven, a hair dryer, a vacuum cleaner, yes, anything. And they're it's hard to find repair shops for those anymore. So they bring them to the fix-it clinic, and they learn how to fix their stuff. And I love that this option is out there now, and it's really caught on. People are just so happy with it. They're empowered when they learn how mm-hmm. to fix their things. Mm-hmm. They're willing to tackle that when they get home. So this notion of getting more life out of the stuff that we have and really valuing it as a piece of nature, really, because that's ultimately what it is. It's great. And yes, we're seeing all kinds of great things happening from the curbside composting, which I'm proud to say I was part of bringing to Minneapolis. And that's catching on around the area, as well as our sports facilities, too, are really working in that direction.
And I would think that most people are certainly aware of the kinds of things that you're talking about. Not so sure that most people are participating in it yet. Again, going back to my assumption, is that people think of pollution, they think in terms of those smokestacks with all this stuff coming out. They think of sludge going into the rivers and through the sewers and what have you. That's what they think pollution is. And this, I gather, is really, I don't want to say a minor part of it, but what we're talking about here, what we use as waste, is the major part of it. Is that right?
Well, for example, plastic bags. How often when you're driving down any city street or any rural area do you see plastic bags or plastic cups or any kind of plastic waste out there caught in trees and laying by the roadside? And when plastic moves down through the water cycle, because it's kind of light, it floats, you know, when there is those kinds of things, it breaks up, it becomes particulate. We have beaches on the planet now that are tiny little particles of plastic, and we have a vortex of plastic flotsam in the ocean that world, you know, global currents carry there and were discovered by a guy that was following a sunk shipment of rubber duckies and found the plastic vortex in the ocean. So we do see it. And in neighborhoods where littering is controlled, where littering is reduced. There are statistics that show that crime goes down, property values go down, people become more engaged in their neighborhood. Maybe they become engaged because they have a community garden in that neighborhood, and that gets them outside to talk to each other and to look at that neighborhood and become aware of that flotsam and what the other alternatives are. And then maybe they even talk to each other about not having to buy so much stuff, which becomes a burden on family budgets.
Well, you mentioned those the plastic bags and how they collect as islands in the various oceans. I've heard that some of them are the size of New Jersey.
Yes, it's absolutely true. I mean, the size is debatable, and they're still trying to figure it out, but it is these masses of plastic. In fact, we've just also located similar island of plastic, in fact, in more density in Lake Superior. So even in the Great Lakes, we're finding these plastic bits that are really causing problems up there as well.
But why do we have plastic bags? I mean, you know, they're made from oil, you know, which is a problem. And they're all over the place, as Jean has indicated, including our oceans. Why isn't someone saying, you know, why are we still using these plastic bags? They are a problem.
Absolutely. In some places they are. In Europe, you see very few. They put a tax, a fee on plastic bags in many places in Europe. And it turns out that a small fee put on disposable bags is actually a really great policy strategy to reduce. It turns out that people don't like to have fees put on things like that when they know they could bring something easily from home to carry it home. But you're absolutely right, Don. The plastic bag is sort of the epitome of misconsumption. You know, it's using the wrong material for the wrong purpose.
The city of San Francisco banned plastic bags. There have been bans on using bottled water, which deals with another kind of plastic waste. In Clayton, there is a group of students that are still in middle school that have been working there in their third school year now, working on getting a plastic bag ban in Clayton. And they have the message from the mayor was they needed to go to businesses in Clayton and get some buy-in. They have done that. They are working through a political process in the municipality where they live to have plastic bags banned from stores in Clayton.
You know, it used to be you'd go to the supermarket and they would say plastic or paper. They don't even ask that question.
Well, they still do, but they mumble.
And really, plastic or paper.
They should.
I was going to say, and really, plastic and paper are flip sides of the same coin. The issue is to bring your reusable bag, of course.
Sure, because paper is made from trees. and that's another part of the problem, I
And say. Now the person who bags your groceries gets trained on how to bag groceries in bags that people bring. That's also relatively new, which is an advance.
Definitely.
Obviously, it's a slow process. And, you know, you've been working on it for 25 years, and it'll probably be another 25 years before we're where you, Jean, and you, Madeline, want us to be.
We're sort of a slow change species, don't you think, Don?
I
with
do.
All the topics I you deal with.
I do think so. We have to take a break now. My guests in studio are Madeline Choci. She is going to be appearing this evening at 7 o'clock at the Ethical Society on Clayton Road, by the way. She's there at the invitation of Women's Voices Raised for Social Justice. By the way, that event at the Ethical Society is free and open to the public. Also with me in studio is Jean Ponzi, Green Resources Manager for the Earthway Center at the Missouri Botanical Garden. We'll come back and continue the conversation. We're talking about the environment and things we can do, relatively minor things we can do, to deal with our waste so that it is not the problem that it has become. 382-8255 is our number if you'd like to join the conversation. You can also send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org, and we'll take a tweet at STL on air. Back in a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back. Before we continue our conversation on how we can responsibly deal with our waste, here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. Illinois Secretary of State Jesse White announced that he will run next year for a fifth term. If reelected, White would become the first person to serve five terms in that office. In less than an hour, U.S. Attorney Steve Wigington of Illinois' Southern District and local law enforcement will hold a news conference about new tactics to reduce armed robberies in the Metro East. And a new National Environment Report shows Missouri's coal-fired power plants contribute significantly to global warming. Join St. Louis Public Radio this afternoon for local and regional news and throughout the day on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Okay, back with Madeline Chochi, I beg your pardon, and Gene Ponzi. We're talking about our environment and the way we can deal responsibly with our waste. We have a number of calls, not surprising. I'd like to get right to the audience, and we'll bring in Mike calling from Webster Groves, who may be taking another argument in this discussion. Go ahead, Mike.
Hi. I've taken a couple graduate courses at Webster University on sustainability. And I know there's a whole other group of people out there that completely disagree with what the guests are saying, although I agree mostly with what they're saying about consumption and reusing. And I just wanted to kind of address that, and do they think those people have a valid argument to say that they can consume as much as they feel like it? So that's my question.
Okay. I think I may know the answer myself, but let's go ahead. Madeline, you want to take that on?
Well, my answer to the people who say they can consume all they want is really about sort of their moral stance on that. I mean, the world is a finite place. The fact of the matter is we have finite resources. And if we use them all up, there will be none later on. It doesn't feel like that, the way we have things advertised to us, the way things are sold to us. We certainly are sold this bill of goods that it's, so to speak, that we have limitless resources. And it's just not true. So it's a matter of how you see the future and how you look out. Are you looking just for yourself and your interest and what is convenient for you today? Or are you taking an eye towards the future and the world that we want to leave for other people?
Gene?
And what are your values? Are you defining success and happiness and the quality of life by
Absolutely.
The amount of stuff you can buy and the amount of stuff you can have? And if you drop dead tomorrow, what happens to that stuff? There are countries in the world, there are places in the world where there are actual indices of happiness that rely on factors like, you know, the your circle of friends and the quality of spirituality in your life, whatever form that takes. And are you satisfied with your job? And do you feel like you're contributing to your community? It is a kind of impoverishment, I think, frankly, in our society to have the value that we can have, we can buy, we can get whatever we want.
And actually, the research says exactly what you're saying, Joan, which is that the more materialistic concerns that you have, I mean, the higher your stress level generally, you report lower self-esteem, you report lower happiness, and even an increase in physical symptoms comes with higher materialistic values. So it really is about what kind of life do you want to live and how do you want to spend these precious days you have here?
That's got to be a hard sell in this society.
Anything having to do with values is always a hard sell. And that's one of the things, frankly, Don, that I've always really loved about working with environmental subject matter is that there is no right or wrong answer. But you get to sometimes have interactions with other human beings about values and what people think and about how they feel. And that is a kind of an enrichment.
There's a role here, I think, for government, too. You brought up this idea of happiness indicators. And the state of Maryland has recently figured out that economic growth is not really a constant. It's not going to work as a model, constant economic growth. And the GDP, the way most states measure their progress through the gross domestic product indicator, it doesn't measure pollution as a negative. It measures pollution as a positive. And so the state of Maryland has recently implemented a genuine progress indicator in addition to their GDP measurement. And this is actually looking at what it costs the state in pollution, about income inequality. So they're actually starting to take into account some of these value issues and saying government has a role in actually the well-being of our people.
What about the EPA? Is the EPA approaching it that way?
I wouldn't say the EPA is approaching it that way yet. However, I know that there are six other states that have been talking with Maryland in depth about this GPI indicator. It's definitely catching on just this year, and I'm very excited about that.
I think it makes a lot more sense to have programs like that and to have efforts like that, organizational of intergovernmental or quasi-government units, like we have our solid waste management district structure in the state of Missouri that started up when we passed a law back in 1990 that banned several things from landfills, and it established a statewide goal for increase in recycling participation and diversion rates. So there are 20 of those districts around the state that locally support local businesses, local programs, local nonprofits with grants and with technical assistance that are locally appropriate. And I think that's a really sensible way to go. There is definitely a role for government. There are things that have come from the US EPA, the Recycling on the Go program structure, for example, which our St. Louis Earth Day organization has taken out now to over 70 different kinds of events, many different kinds of events around St. Louis. Pride celebration, Festival of Nations, Taste of St. Louis, Best of Missouri Market, it's all Festival of the Little Hills in St. Charles. You can go to any of those events now, and in US EPA methodology applied by a local organization brings recycling and composting and landfill waste stations to those events and puts that out, again, in the public eye.
But, you know, I mentioned the EPA a moment ago, and the reason I did so is because there is a powerful political bloc in this country that wants to eliminate that department.
Could we talk about eliminating women's participation in government, too, while we're having that same discussion?
I'm
being facetious.
I'm asking the questions, Jane.
Sorry.
It's a lot easier to ask them than answer them, I know. But
right. Well, there is this notion out there that somehow regulation is a bad thing. And the point of fact is that regulation has worked in many cases. We have cleaner air now than we used to. We have cleaner water now than we used to. The sludge and the smokestacks that you referred to before, Don, those have been largely cleaned up. That's what pollution control regulation all about, and it's been largely successful. What's happening is that we have more and more smokestacks and tailpipes and water distribution or water outlets that are still polluting because we're making more and more stuff. So though they're cleaner, there's just more of it, and that's where our pollution is coming from, and we're driving that.
Let's go back to the phones. Jerry and O'Fallon. Jerry, thanks for being with us.
Hey, good morning. Yes. In the small part of it, there's a Aldi, the local one of the grocery store chains here, charges a nominal amount for plastic bags. I mean, I think it's under a nickel. And I think 98% of the people that shop there bring their own bags. So I think that's very effective. When you talk about regulation, I think, unfortunately, most people don't realize that the people that are always saying that we need to deregulate are generally the people that realize a higher profit by doing away with regulations that make them force them to be cleaner or whatever, whatever the regulation's about. And I think in the big picture, we have about 4 or 5% of the Earth's population. We consume close to 25% of the resources and I think generate an almost equal percentage of the planet's waste. And in a word, that is just simply unsustainable.
All right, Jerry, thanks for the call. Any comment, ladies, for what he had to say? You're making notes, Madeline, like crazy here.
He's absolutely right about the regulation and the companies that complain about that. But it's interesting because we're starting to see that there are some sectors, some business sectors that are actually saying, you know, bring us to a level playing field. We don't want state by state regulations on what's allowed in a product or what's not allowed in a product. So if Washington is going to ban BPA or lead or something in products there, and they have other restrictions in Minnesota or other restrictions in Missouri, that becomes difficult for a company to deal with. So we've actually seen some companies step forward and say, we would like a level playing field. And that's where I think regulation can be beneficial even to them.
But hardly a groundswell.
Well, I guess I wouldn't call it a groundswell, but having worked with businesses in St. Louis now implementing sustainable practices, day-to-day business practices, over 150 businesses in our St. Louis Green Business Challenge since 2010, there definitely is a level of literacy. There's a level of implementation and integration of sustainable thinking and practice, and it becomes part of businesses' values. And there are more and more businesses that are making that be profitable. It's a change in how we think about things in the same way that diversity as a movement in society or even safety. You know, it wasn't all that long ago when you built a building and only a couple of guys died or lost a hand, you were doing pretty good. But regulation happens in so many different forms. You don't just figure out what dosage of a pharmaceutical medicine to take. That's been regulated somewhere. Appreciating the value of regulation and being able to discern, you know, where is regulation helpful, where is regulation not helpful, and where should it happen at a more federal level? Where should it you know, participating in our society in that way and not just going, oh, nobody can tell me what to do. You know, intelligence is part of the issue here, and human beings are a very intelligent species. Giving credit for what we do think of, what we are implementing, and encouraging more of that. And, you know, I said earlier, 25 years I've been working with this subject matter. Kids that were in recycling education programs back then are young professionals in the workforce now. And that is a big factor in what's driving those companies to have anything to do with green.
It kind of reminds me of what's happened with smoking. They started working on the kids, telling their parents to stop smoking. And ultimately, it's worked fairly well. Still a long way to go.
And they did have to be regulated.
And they did have to be. Now let's see if we can bring Diane into the discussion. Are you there, Diane?
Hi.
Hi.
Yes, I was wanting to make a couple of comments. The first one was in regards to the grocery bags. I use grocery bags. Again, the paper ones I put in my trash can rather than going out and buying plastic bags to line my trash can. Then I also have a kind of diaper container that you can use any kind of bag, plastic bag you want. So I use plastic bags from the grocery store for that. So I reuse them. I don't throw them in my trash can. The other thing I wanted to talk about was the you were talking about recycling. One of the greatest ways to recycle that benefits everybody, the recycler and the recyclee, is secondhand shops. Go and shop at secondhand shops, and you're benefiting everybody. And I've gotten some great stuff there. And the last thing I wanted to talk about was regulation started for businesses with the shirtwaist factory in New York, where over 180 women, some of them children, died. Because there were no regulations to protect people, and there was a fire there. And so I don't want to go back to that. I'm not against regulations. We need them. Business owners do not think of safer ways unless we force it sometimes.
Diane, thank you so much for the call. Well, she certainly reinforced your point, Jane.
Very good points. Yeah.
Very
absolutely.
Good points.
Yeah, right. There's an area here that I wanted to get to eventually, but let's have Mike take us there right now. He's calling from St. Louis. Go ahead, Mike. Mike, are you there? Mike?
Yeah, there
go ahead.
Go ahead. Okay. I'm German-born, brought up pretty conservatively. I've been saving all my life, and it took me a long time to be an American consumer. But I'm still relatively conservative on materials and stuff. But my curiosity, and I'm tend to be against regulations. I tend to be for the economic model of making things work privately. And I'm wondering, is there any high-tech company out there that is promoting the reuse or the dismantling of their products rather than putting them in dump, you know, in large dumps that get sent to China for the Chinese to then dismantle and recycle.
Or to Africa.
Yeah.
Mike, thanks so much for the call. Yeah, I wanted to get there because that's the electronic gadgetry has taken over in this country and very difficult. Gene, you're nodding your head. You're very difficult to dispose of this stuff.
There is a growing product stewardship initiative in that that's the term for it where the waste minimization forces work with the manufacturers to get the manufacturers to design products so that they can be dismantled, so that they can be effectively parts may be able to be reused. Bosch is one. It's a German company that is famous for being able to reuse parts of Bosch appliances. I just read an article yesterday about product stewardship in the pharmaceutical industry where the manufacturer takes a responsibility and the manufacturer shoulders some of the fiscal burden, which could be less of a fiscal burden if they would design and package and market their products in a way that would minimize or perhaps even eliminate waste down the chain of using those products. And Madeline, you probably have a lot more knowledge, you know, statistics about product stewardship than I do on the top of my brain.
Yeah, it's really taking off. You're totally right, though. In fact, Minnesota has an e-waste program as well, and it just passed its paint. Take back program. So now you're going to be able to take old paint back to your retailer for reuse. In terms of the technology, there are several computer companies that actually will take back their take back their goods as well. I'd like to also do a shout out for Patagonia. They have a really fascinating program called the Common Threads Program. They've made a commitment to their customers that they will make a durable good and that they will also repair it. If you send it to them, they will do repairs. And in exchange, they ask you not to throw it away. They ask you to only buy their clothes when you need it, which is something for a business.
I just like to let people know what they're dealing with. If they throw away a computer monitor, for instance, or the computer itself, or a television, we see these awful pictures of kids in Africa and China. We're picking through this stuff. What, madam, to you, what is the danger there? What is in these things that is so very dangerous?
2 to 6 pounds of lead is what's in those old CRT monitors, just to start with. And unfortunately, that process of recycling has not been particularly well regulated. So people can just go out there and call themselves electronics recyclers and collect this material. And in fact, there was just a news item that was talking about how warehouses are showing up loaded with CRT monitors that have been abandoned. So people have taken the money, said, yes, I'll recycle your stuff, put it in a warehouse, and left it there. It's turning out to be a huge problem.
And a huge business, too, for somebody.
And a huge business, though illegal, for somebody.
Yeah, right. Okay. Let me take our next break now and come back to the phones. Again, we have a lot of calls, lots to talk about. And we'll continue the conversation with Gene Ponzi, who is the Green Resources Manager at Earthways Center of Missouri at the Earthways Center of Missouri Botanical Garden, is what I'm trying to say. Also with us is Madeline Choche, environmental activist and waste prevention specialist, Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Back to continue our conversation in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And before we continue our conversation about dealing responsibly with our waste with Madeline Choche and Gene Ponzi, let me tell you that this year's Green Homes and Great Health Festival will be held this year at the Missouri Botanical Garden on September 28th. The event runs from 9 to 5. Gene, that's your baby.
9 to 4.
9 to 4. Beg your pardon. What's happening there?
Well, we'll have over 100 exhibitors and the product and service vendors, nonprofit organizations, resources for all things green in your lifestyle. And one of the things I love about that event is people will come with their ideas. You know, here's what I want to do in my life, my organization, my project. How do I do it? And you can actually discuss what you want to do with the experts. We have a DIY sustainability area, so the kind of make it and take it, fix it thing will be a part of that. That's being curated by Perennial, an organization that picks up furniture in alleys and turns it into other arty things. We will have an electronic waste recycling event for the first time from 9 to 2. A green vehicle show. We paint a metro bus. There's activities for kids, including making art with recycled materials. And it is all included with regular garden admission on the 28th of September.
Great. 28th of September from 9 to 4.
Yes.
All right. And Madeline Choche will be appearing this evening. I'm repeating this just so everybody knows for sure. At 7 o'clock at the Ethical Society on Clayton Road. She's here at the invitation of Women's Voices Raised for Social Justice. It's open to the public. Let's go right back to the phones. Tom has what appears to be a very interesting approach to this. Let's take his call from Pacific. Go ahead, Tom.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm curious, what role do you think religion plays in this? I've heard a lot of religious people that basically, you know, their position is that God gave us the earth to use, and they're going on to some infinite heaven or some silliness. And they think that they can just use the environment because this is just a small aspect of their infinite life. And anyway, you see it expressed like in Theodore Sizek or whatever, who was dismissed from the evangelical churches in Washington as a lobbyist because he started taking pro-environmental positions. You see churches opposed to environmentalism everywhere. I just think religion is causing a lot of the problems. What do you think?
Well, there are a very diverse and growing number of faith-based groups in this listening area that are directly engaged in a positive way with environmental activity. And that ranges from orders of nuns and priests to Jewish congregations to Christian denomination congregations. There is a very vibrant faith-based movement of environmental stewardship that ranges from green sanctuary programs where folks actually look at what's happening in their church to service programs that send people out into other areas to religious orders investing their funds in environmentally sustainable choices.
Madeline, how about from your neck of the woods?
Absolutely. We have a chapter of Interfaith Power and Light, which is a national group and coalition of religious organizations.
I think we're just getting that in Missouri.
Well, that's exciting.
Yeah, it is.
And they've done great work holding lots of workshops with lots of different faith communities to talk with them about their faith and what it says about caring for the earth. So I think there's a lot of hopefulness there.
Okay. Continuing on with some of the questions from our listeners, Amy in Edwardsville sends us an email saying, what should one do to properly dispose of small propane canisters like the size used for welding? Our charcoal grill uses one to start the grill. The home improvement stores take the large grill tanks for recycling, but they wouldn't take my small ones.
I believe that in the St. Louis area, they are accepted when there are household hazardous waste collection events or collection locations. I don't know what kind of resource there is for that. In Edwardsville, there is one of those locations that serves the city and county of St. Louis, Jefferson County, and St. Charles County.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. That's how we handle them in Minnesota as well. We advise people to take them to their household hazardous waste drop-offs.
We have a tweet. It would be nice if companies and food places reduced packaging. It's made to be used for mere moments. Any work going on in this area?
To reduce packaging?
Yeah.
There's a lot of, I think, effort to reduce packaging. This is one of those cases where it's really in the business's best interest because it's going to cost them less to put their package out there. And so we see a lot of lightweighting of water bottles, which I think is a distracting issue because mm-hmm. ultimately the water in the bottles is a problem and putting water in bottles is a problem. But there's a lot of lightweighting that's going on, and that's happening. I've seen it in boxes and pouches and all sorts of things, which is not to say that the packaging is not a problem. It's a huge percentage of our waste stream. So to the extent that you can find ways to buy in bulk, that helps. That's always a better deal with less waste.
Partnerships between different kinds of packaging organizations, too. I think of the gable top packaging of milk cartons mm-hmm. and fruit juice cartons. Mm-hmm. They are a partner with national recycling organizations, and therefore you can put those in your recycling now. So the product, the packaging producers, not only reducing the amount, but working to make sure that what they do produce can be recycled conveniently in many, if not most, communities.
What should we do with these water bottles? I mean, we've mentioned them a couple of times. There have to be billions of them out there.
Well, we've all got, let's see, reusable cups here on the counter. That would be the first thing, is carry one with you and reuse it. And be aware that there is no additional regulation that governs the purity of the water that you get in the bottle compared to what you get from the tap. That is a total myth.
Even though they say fresh, vibrant springs or whatever.
They say that about deodorant, too.
Right. Exactly. So, and there's this, I mean, again, with bottled water, it's not just the bottles, you know, it's what we have done to get the water in there. So you've pumped the water out of a spring someplace distant from where you are, and then you've transported it here. And water is a heavy thing to move around. So there are way more greenhouse gases involved in that.
And then you have paid $1, $2 per bottle, as opposed to pennies or less for the water out of the tap that is delivered as part of your municipal utility.
How did we get there? I mean,
marketing, 100% total marketing on the part of the beverage companies that wanted to sell a new product because people weren't buying enough of the old products, which were sodas.
Precisely. Our consumption patterns have been completely engineered. It's really interesting to read about it. I mean, people sat in a boardroom and said, I bet we could sell tap water.
And I'll bet you that person was laughed at until they realized they could make money.
Could have been the reincarnation of P.T. Barnum.
Right,
so
exactly.
Part of it,
it's one born every minute.
Uh-huh. Right. Exactly. And so part of it is that we are not always thinking very carefully about what we're consuming and what it's doing to the environment. If we think just a few steps back from what it is we're choosing to use or to drink or to eat, just a few steps back, you might stop and maybe not take that thing.
Alice in Kirkwood is thinking. She says here, one of the things she does to decrease consumption is limit screen time before the television set. The more we watch TV, the more we want to buy. And this is, you're talking about marketing. That's where it's coming from.
Amen.
Amen.
There's a new big box store brand called Bye Bye Baby. B-U-Y-B-U-Y Babies. Mm-hmm. We get marketing targeted to us from the time before we are born until after we die.
Well, this is where critical thinking has to come in, yes. And you have to just be evaluate what you're seeing and hearing.
And right. I think, and we found at Earthway Center that a lot of times when people have the facts, when they know what happens to those materials we need to get recycled, when they know what happens, where does something go when you throw it away? People are really more likely to be conscientious and make different choices, and I have found that people are very interested in those facts.
I think that's true. It's hard with advertising, and I totally sympathize with Alice, and she's doing a great thing by limiting her child's screen time there, because children don't have any way to block and understand the manipulative messages of advertising. They really don't have that. So the best thing that she can do is to limit that.
And that's changing, too. I mean, there is this whole media literacy thing going on, and it's beginning to catch on, where youngsters in school are actually being taught how to think critically about the messages they receive.
Yes, and not a minute too soon, because we have been, when you ask how did this happen, I mean, we have really been played. The advertisers know our human nature, and they know our weaknesses, and they have played on that. They appeal to our emotions, they appeal to our desire to fit in, they appeal to our happiness. And, you know, unfortunately, a lot of NGOs and government for a long time responded with information and facts, and that's no match for appealing to our emotions.
It depends on how it's packaged, and that's where they're really, really good. Let's go to Andrew calling from St. Louis. Thanks for waiting, Andrew. You're on the air.
Yes, I'm the director of a Landmarks Association of St. Louis. We're a local nonprofit organization that advocates for historic preservation. And I wanted to hear your perspectives. I certainly know where I stand on the matter, but I consider the adaptive reuse of buildings to be really recycling and reusing on a really grand scale. You know, when we deal with students, which we do frequently through our educational programs, one of the things I talk to them about is recycling what they do with their school and their households, what they recycle. And then I ask them to compare the amount of waste that they think that they keep out of landfills in their school every year with the amount of waste that goes into a landfill when a gigantic building or even just a simple home is demolished. So I'm interested to hear if there are, people in the environmental world are thinking along the same lines that I'm thinking along.
Madeline?
Absolutely, Andrew. I think you raise a great point. And historic preservation of buildings, making those buildings continue on, continuing to use those materials that have already been dug out of the ground and processed and built is a huge thing. Make them as energy efficient as you can, but definitely keep them. The greenest building is one that's already built.
And Jean, this has been a message of yours for a long time.
Oh, absolutely. Whether it's homes or whether it's commercial buildings, what I wish is that we had more of a driver to reuse things like buildings in strip malls and big box stores, as opposed to, you know, leaving one empty and then moving to the next newest one a little bit further out that requires a lot more infrastructure and a lot more material. I think that innovation in adaptive reuse and the range of organizations that we have in the St. Louis Area Landmarks Association being one of them that are champions of the beautiful building stock and the resources that we have. And then businesses like the Habitat for Humanity Restore or Refab, companies that will actually deconstruct buildings as opposed to just knock them down, they are part of that for when buildings do need to, part of the whole package.
Well, you need those old big box stores as a place to put those old television sets, right? And apparently that's what they're being used for in some cases. Let's go to Afton and bring in Tom. Tom, you've been very patient, but go ahead. It's your turn.
Thanks, Don. I have a question, but I wanted to just say how excited I am about the reuse movement. You know, anybody who works with cars or building materials or electronics knows that this disposable everything is the way of now. And if you can get an old one and fix it up, you get a much better material and much better manufacturing. And I'm a St. Louis native, but I used to live in Minnesota in the Twin Cities, and I was a big fan of the reuse center up there. But my question is plastics. I was living in a town that recycled 5 to 7 different kinds of plastics. And even though we'd like to get away from plastics, they're not going to go away entirely. I thought, gee, it must be inefficient to recycle five or six different kinds of plastics because each one is a different industrial process. Does anyone talk about having whole states or municipalities like metro areas get down to just three or four types of plastic? Because then maybe the recycling could pay for itself and wouldn't require any government subsidies.
Tom, thanks for the call. Any thoughts, ladies? Jean, do you?
So if I'm understanding him correctly, he's talking about actually trying to sort of choice edit the number, the amounts of plastics that are out there. And that's not a discussion that I have heard. We certainly have increased the range of plastics that are accepted for recycling in the markets in Minnesota, at least. And if anybody has a chance to go see a recycling facility at work, I absolutely urge you to go do it. It's a fascinating process to see how they sort out all these different resin codes. I agree. I think the same about glass, that I would like to bring back glass reuse. And I wonder why we need so many shapes and sizes of bottles. Couldn't we just have a few and have those be easily reused by the companies?
And they're all petroleum-based, and we all know what a problem we have with that diminishing resource.
As companies, as the business sector becomes more sustainability-minded, one of the core principles of sustainable thinking is zero waste. So if you have a waste material in your process, whether it's in your supply chain or your manufacturing process, that's a cost center for you. And the sensible thing is to find an end user that can take whatever it is you're using. Shrink wrap is a really good example of that, which serves a useful purpose when stuff is being shipped on pallets. The kinds of plastic lumber that are designed, Trex is one brand, that are designed for structural stability, mm-hmm. that is a hybrid of recycled plastic from a material like film, like shrink wrap, and then wood dust is mixed in with that. So when it's a blend of those two kinds of material, it's strong enough to be used for structural building. There's a kind of innovation that looks for a waste product, makes good use of it, and then connects with the waste generation, what generators, in order to get their feedstock.
A lot of people are building their decks these days out of products just such as you described. Mm-hmm. Let's I think we have time for one more call. We'll bring in Wayne calling from Kirkwood. He's been waiting a long time. Go ahead, Wayne, but time's a-wasting.
Hi, Don. I just wanted to say hello to Madeline Chochi. I was her science teacher at Knifer Middle School, and I just wanted to tell her how proud I am of what she's doing.
Mr. Baldwin, it's great to hear from you.
Madeline, I'm so proud of you. We're fighting the good fight in Kirkwood, and you're out there doing it, and I appreciate everything that you and Jean are talking about today.
Mr. Baldwin was also a teacher in the LEAP, Leadership and Environmental Action Projects program of MERP and later the Earthway Center, so some of his students are now some of those young professionals that are out in the workforce greening the workforce.
Well, we should give him a round of applause for the people that he inspired during his teaching days. Well, our time is limited, but I'll start with you on this, Gene. Just give us a kind of a brief sense of what the individual should be doing in terms of their day-to-day activities and fulfilling the kinds of things we're talking about today.
Relative to waste minimization, relative to sustainable living, realize that we have choices, we have responsibilities that are much more fulfilling and centered and life-enhancing than just the choice of one product or another, and is this going to be a nickel cheaper than that? The idea of material exchanges, whether that's everybody on your block gets together and how many people have a lawnmower, how many people have a ladder, and you share those things around. That's something that really hasn't taken place in St. Louis yet, but is exciting in other parts of the country. There are so many resources in the St. Louis area for understanding sustainable living, Green Homes and Great Health Festival, September 28th, certainly one of them, but other kinds of things that are getting us to have green practices be mainstream and thinking about zero waste. Do we need it in the first place? Can we reuse it? Can it be reused? Ultimately, can it be recycled? And having those be part of our decision-making matrix.
And Madeline Chochi, a final thought from you?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say be willing to pay for something of quality, something that's going to last you a long time. Be willing to pay that money. And then tell somebody that you care about this, because the most powerful thing you can do is be an example for somebody else. The more people who know, there are people out there that care. And so if you tell them you care, they know, they care. It's much easier to behave the way you think is right when you know you've got a group of people around you.
Give it some thought. Just don't discount it. Give it some thought. That's Madeline Chochi. She will be appearing tonight at 7 o'clock at the Ethical Society on Clayton Road. She's here as a guest of Women's Voices Raised for Social Justice. That event is open to the public, and it is free, which is something we'd like to say. It's always good when it's free. And Jean has already mentioned for the second time the Green Homes and Great Health Festival. That's September 28th at the Missouri Botanical Garden from 9 to 4. Ladies, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, John. Always an interesting conversation
when we get here, and we always have a wonderful audience response when we talk about the environment, and that's good. Join Steve Potter tomorrow for Cityscape when he'll talk about the Rep's season opening production of Cabaret, also about STL Design Week 2013, and in the next installment of Soundbites produced with Sauce Magazine, he'll take a look at new restaurants and bars opening in St. Louis. Monday on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk with journalist Ray Suarez about his book examining the history of the Latin American community in this country. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. Programs produced by Mary Edwards, Alex Hoyer, production assistants from Camille Phillips, Aaron Dorr, Jeremy Bailey, Kristen Torres, and Spencer Reed. Executive producers Robert Peterson. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.